In the last episode, we covered the numerous schools that Lee Harvey Oswald attended from first grade through eighth grade. We also talked about several instances of the records not lining up or making sense. For example, the 7408 Ewing address listed for Oswald at Benbrook Common School 2 years before the Oswalds lived there. The allegations of Oswald being in North Dakota in the summer of 1953, and most notably, the Beauregard report card showing that Oswald attended 89 days of junior high school in New Orleans in the fall of 1953, when we know that Oswald was still living in New York and attending PS 44 at the time. I'm not sure what those evidentiary anomalies mean, but you have to admit that those things I just mentioned don't seem to add up. In this episode, we continue looking at the upbringing of Lee Harvey Oswald, this time focusing on 1954 when Oswald was in the middle of his eighth grade year at Beauregard until Oswald dropped out of high school. We'll look at Oswald's job at Dolly Shoe Company, confusion over Oswald's address in New Orleans, the conflicting evidence about Oswald attending Stripling Junior High School in Fort Worth when he was supposed to be at Beauregard in New Orleans, and whether Oswald knew David Ferry from his time in the Civil Air Patrol.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed custody. The man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. According to the Warren Report, Marguerite and Lee Oswald left New York to return to New Orleans in January of 1954. This timeline conflicts with the Beauregard Junior High School report card that's in the Warren Report volumes, which shows that Oswald attended 89 days of school at Beauregard in the fall of 1953. But let's put that aside for now. Regardless of what happened in the fall of 53, we know for sure that Oswald was attending Beauregard during the spring semester of 1954 for the second half of eighth grade. When Marguerite and Lee arrived in New Orleans in January, they stayed for 2 weeks at 809 French Street, where Marguerite's sister Lillian Moret lived. Marguerite and Lee then moved into 1454 St. Mary's, which was an apartment building owned by Marguerite's friend of 20 years, Myrtle Evans. The Oswalds lived at this apartment from mid-January 1954 until November of 1954, when they moved next door to 1452 St. Mary's for cheaper rent. Oswald was enrolled in classes at Beauregard shortly after he returned to New Orleans. Myra DeRouse was a gym teacher and was Oswald's homeroom teacher for spring semester of eighth grade in 1954. Here's DeRouse talking about her interactions with Oswald.
Yeah, I held my roll call. They're in the cafeteria on a stage in the basement. Sometime after Christmas, I got a new student. It turned out that his name was Lee Harvey Oswald. I never called him Lee Harvey Oswald because he asked me not to call him Lee. And I asked him what he'd like called, and he said Harvey. So I've known him as Harvey Oswald.
DeRouse got to know Oswald from being his homeroom teacher. She also remembers seeing him in the mornings before school, waiting on the front steps for the school doors to be unlocked. She said that the only person she ever saw Oswald hang out with was Ed Vobel, who DeRouse often saw riding bikes after school with Oswald. DeRouse specifically remembered an incident related to an upright piano that fell on Oswald.
On one occasion, when we were practicing basketball in the schoolyard, Ed Vobel runs out the yard and says, Mr. Roos, come inside quick. So Dorothy Newvick, the other PE teacher, and I went into the basement, and there on the floor was Harvey with an upright piano that had fallen. And he was about his legs, from about the waist down, was under the piano.
DeRouse and the other teacher helped Ed Vobel lift this piano off of Oswald. She then asked Oswald if he was okay, and he said yes, but DeRouse wanted to call his mom just to be safe. Oswald said that his mom wasn't available because she was at work and asked that she not be called.
Well, you know, this happened at school and you can't be too careful, so I called our principal, Mr. McMurdo, and asked him what I should do. And he said, well, Myra, take him down to Mona Leopard. That's where we always take the kids hurt or they get sick. Well, Mona Leopard Clinic is about a mile east of the school on Canal Street. So we got in the car and I drove Harvey down and they examined him. They said he was fine. Then it was getting dark and it was a little after 5. So I didn't want him going home by himself. So I asked him where he lived. He said he lived on Exchange Alley down near the river. So I drove him down, and it was really a kind of disgusting place. And I was awfully glad I didn't get.
We just heard DeRouse say that she gave Oswald a ride home to Exchange Alley at some time during spring semester of 1954. So that's sometime before school was out. But we know that during spring semester of 1954, Oswald lived at 1454 St. Mary's, where Marguerite's friend Myrtle Evans was their landlord. They lived there until they moved next door to 1452 St. Mary's in November of 1954. This is consistent with Warren Commission Exhibit 1963, which is a timeline of Oswald's addresses. Exchange Alley, where Oswald was dropped off by his teacher, and St. Mary's are 2 miles apart. So what's going on here? Is Myra DeRouse just wrong about where she dropped off Oswald or what? The Warren Commission never interviewed Myra DeRouse, but she was interviewed by the FBI. That report says that the interview took place on April 2nd, 1964, but DeRouse claims that the FBI actually spoke to her on the Monday after the assassination. One more discrepancy in the record that was pointed out by Myra DeRouse is the room number listed for Oswald's homeroom class on his report card for the spring of 1954. DeRouse says that her homeroom was in the cafeteria, which was in the basement, but Oswald's report cards in the National Archives say Lee Oswald, Grade 8, homeroom 303. Maybe this is just another report card anomaly that won't really end up mattering, but DeRouse's homeroom was in the cafeteria, not on the third floor, which is where room 303 was located. So why does Oswald's report card say something different? Oswald completed eighth grade at Beauregard Junior High in New Orleans. He started ninth grade at Beauregard in the fall of 1954. But there is a decent amount of evidence that points to Oswald going to Stripling Junior High in Fort Worth at the beginning of ninth grade in the fall of 1954 when he was supposed to be enrolled at Beauregard in New Orleans. So what kind of evidence are we talking about here? The starting point is the Warren Commission testimony of Lee's brother, Robert Oswald. Robert told the commission in 1964 that Lee went to Stripling Junior High School. Years earlier, Robert was interviewed by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram after Lee had defected to the Soviet Union in 1959 and when Lee came back to America in 1962. In both of those interviews, Robert Oswald is consistent in saying that Lee went to Stripling Junior High in Fort Worth. Now, to be clear, Robert Oswald tells the commission that Lee went to Stripling for 7th grade during the 1951-52 school year. But we know that Lee lived in New York for 7th grade and was attending two different schools and spending some time in youth house for truancy during that school year. He most definitely was not in Fort Worth. Now, it would be easy to say that Robert Oswald just has the years mixed up, and who cares? But the problem is that Robert was steadfast in his insistence that Lee went to Stripling. Also, Robert's statement to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram in 1962 was that Lee attended Stripling, quote, about a year before he enlisted in the Marines. So that tends to support a later timeline closer to Oswald's freshman or sophomore year of high school. To be clear, the official story is that Lee Harvey Oswald never attended Stripling at all. In 1993, in an attempt to follow up on Robert Oswald's testimony, researcher John Armstrong got in touch with then-Stripling principal Ricardo Galindo to see if there was any truth to Robert Oswald's consistent claims about Lee going to Stripling. Principal Galindo said that it was common knowledge that Oswald had attended Stripling. Armstrong then followed up and tried to find anyone who would have attended school with Oswald when he went to Stripling. Eventually, he was introduced to Frank Cudlady, who was the vice principal of Stripling Junior High School in 1963. When Armstrong asked Cudlady if Oswald attended Stripling, he said yes. Armstrong asked him how he could be so sure, at which point Cudlady said, "Because I gave his Stripling records to the FBI." Here's Cudlady talking about his interaction with the FBI.
A Saturday morning following the Kennedy assassination, I received a call at home. I lived at 4225 Curzon at that time, from Mr. Wiley, who was my principal, telling me to go to school and to go to the records file and to get Lee Harvey Oswald's records, and that someone from the FBI would be there to pick them up. That's exactly what I did. I went to school. I went to the records files, got his records out. I did open them. I did look at them kind of in a cursory way. And the only thing I can recall is that the records for Stripling were in that he didn't attend there a full year. I put it back in a brown envelope and left it on my desk and waited, 10, 15 minutes or perhaps longer. And two gentlemen came in, showed me identification that they were FBI agents. I gave them the records, and the best I remember, one of them did open the envelope and kind of looked at it. And they thanked me and they left, and I locked the doors and I went home.
Cudlady says that the report card in the Oswald file only had grades for the first 6 weeks of school, and he's sure about that because of where the grades were written on the report card. Oswald wasn't at the school long enough to complete an additional report card, so he knew it had to be just 6 weeks. Cudlady says that the FBI agents didn't give him a receipt or leave any copies of the documents. They took everything. Assuming Cudlady is telling the truth, the files were likely destroyed or remain classified today because we know they're not in the National Archives. Now, a lot of this story comes down to Cudlady's credibility, but Frank Cudlady isn't just any school administrator. He went on to become the superintendent of schools for all of Waco, Texas. So I would think he has to be a fairly sharp guy. And if Cudlady is right, the obvious question is, How did the FBI know to go to Stripling so soon, especially in light of all of the different schools that Oswald went to? And why was it so important for the FBI to secure Oswald's middle school records the next morning after the assassination for a school where Oswald attended for just a few weeks? Do we have anything else in support of Cudlady's claim about Oswald attending Stripling? Franzetta Schubert told Armstrong that when she was in the eighth grade at Stripling, she saw Oswald at the school. She didn't have any classes with him, but she remembered that she was jealous that he got to walk home for lunch every day because he lived across the street from where the basketball courts were, right next to the school. She says that she only saw him during the colder part of the 1954-55 school year at Stripling. Another former Stripling student, Doug Gann, also claims that Oswald went to school there. Gann said Oswald would shoot hoops after school on the basketball court across the street from where Oswald lived. Bobby Pitts lived at 2224 Thomas Place, next door to 2220 Thomas Place, which is the house Franzetta Schubert said Oswald would walk to during lunch each day. Pitts said that Oswald would stand on the porch outside and watch when Pitts and the other neighborhood kids played touch football. In summary, we have Cudlady, Schubert, Gann, and Pitts all on the record stating that Oswald attended Stripling. And remember, we got down this road in the first place because Robert Oswald said on three different occasions that Lee went to Stripling. We can rule out the Warren Commission just missing this part of Oswald's biography because there were zero absences recorded on Oswald's report card at Beauregard Junior High for the fall of 1954. So there you have it. Oswald was at Beauregard. He couldn't have been at both Beauregard and Stripling at the same time. One explanation is that Cudlady, Schubert, Gann, and Pitts all just wanted a taste of the spotlight. They saw an opportunity to make something up about Oswald and they ran with it. It's hard for me to believe that because they really had nothing to gain and their stories all seem to match up, especially the part about Oswald having a house very close to the school across the street from the basketball court. If you listen to Solving JFK a lot, you know that I like to keep the vibes up. And that's why I'm a fan of federally legal cannabis from Mood.com. It's a brand that uses small organic farms to source its pesticide-free legal weed. You can get 20% off of your first order at Mood.com by using code JFK. My favorite product of theirs is the functional THC gummies. Usually I go with Epic Euphoria, but I also like Magic Mind and the Pure Relief CBD gummies. These legal weed gummies take about 20 minutes to kick in, and you can control the dosage yourself. Unlike the federal government, Mood.com has never sold drugs to fund illegal wars or clandestine missions. Thanks, Mood.com. So try out some of the excellent legal cannabis products from Mood.com and get a 20% discount off of your first order using code JFK. I don't know about you, but when I need to get into that Curtis LeMay, sitting there watching the autopsy vibe, I look for a cigar that I can rely on. And that's why I love Thompson Cigar. They've been around since 1915, so they know a thing or two about cigars. Whether it's a quick five-pack for the weekend or joining one of their value clubs, Thompson makes it easy to save while enjoying top-notch cigars. It's like having your own personal humidor with deals that you can't pass up. Visit www.thompsoncigar.com/JFK or use code JFK at checkout for 20% off of your order of $75 or more. Discover why Thompson has been America's humidor since 1915 and join the thousands of satisfied customers who trust Thompson for quality, value, and exceptional service. Now, we don't know for sure whether Oswald went to Stripling Junior High, but we do know that he was back in New Orleans in early 1955. From Oswald's Beauregard report card, it appears that he was attending school full-time during spring semester of ninth grade in 1955. During that time, Lee also picked up a new job working at Dolly's Shoe Store in New Orleans. Actually, Oswald's mom got a job working at Dolly's Shoe first. She started there in early February of 1955. Then, she successfully lobbied her boss to hire Lee, who began to work there on March 16th. Lee's job was to put the shoes back and keep the inventory organized after customers tried shoes on if they didn't end up buying them. It turns out that Lee was not great at doing this job, and he mostly just hung out in the stockroom and did nothing. He didn't really contribute to the value of the store, so eventually, Oswald was fired by manager Maury Goodman around noon on Tuesday, April 12, 1955. According to the Warren Commission, Oswald worked at Dolly's Shoe, quote, mostly on Saturdays for about 10 weeks in 1955. The only other information in the Warren Commission volumes about Dolly's Shoe is Commission Exhibit 1951, which is the W-4 form for both Marguerite Oswald and Lee Harvey Oswald. And what's interesting about this document is that the address noted is 126 Exchange Place, and the date is February 5th, 1955. Now, we know this 126 Exchange Place address from where Myra DeRouse claims that she dropped off Oswald in eighth grade after he had been cleared by the local doctors when a piano fell on his legs at school in the spring of 1954. But Commission Exhibit 1963 says that the Oswalds actually moved into 126 Exchange Place around May of 1955, about a year later. If the Warren Report is correct and Myra DeRouse is wrong, then why is Exchange Place listed on the W-4 form for Dolly's Shoe some 3 months before the Warren Commission says Oswald is supposed to be living there? I also have no idea why Lee Oswald's W-4 was dated the same day as his mother's when she started work a month before him. Now, maybe Marguerite was just really confident that she'd be able to get him a job at Dolly's Shoe, so she went ahead and filled out the form for him at the same time that she filled it out for herself. Who knows? Another question about Dolly's Shoe is when exactly would Oswald have had any time to work there if he was attending school full-time? The Warren Commission, relying on an FBI report about Maury Goodman, said that Oswald worked mostly on Saturdays and sometimes a day or two during the week, but strictly part-time. But Maury Goodman told researcher John Armstrong something different in a recorded 1995 interview. He said that Oswald worked, quote, during the day and sometimes on weekends. Oswald was fired around noon on Tuesday, April 12th. That raises the question of why would Oswald be at work at noon on a Tuesday when he was going to school full-time at Beauregard? Beauregard Junior High was 4 miles away from Dolly's Shoe Store, and Oswald got out of school at 4:30 each afternoon. But Dolly's Shoe closed at 5:45 during the week. So Oswald would have had to travel the 4 miles from school, which would have easily been doable by bus, but by the time that he would have showed up, he would only have about an hour or so to work before the store closed. Oswald's Beauregard records show that he had 0 full-day absences from March 16th through April 30th of 1955. And Ed Vobel, who was probably Oswald's closest friend, having known him since he had the piano dropped on his legs in the eighth grade, said that he didn't know anything about Oswald ever working at Dolly's Shoe Store. If Oswald worked there, he didn't mention it to Vogel. Now, I don't know what's going on here, but the W-4 form from Marguerite and Lee that lists both of them living at an address where the Warren Report says they didn't live until 3 months later is a little strange. And it's not clear that Lee could have worked at Dolly's Shoe and also attended school full-time, all while not missing any full days. From the record, it appears that he did both. In June of 1955, a classmate of Oswald's, Fred O'Sullivan, invited him to join the Civil Air Patrol, also known as the CAP. The CAP was in 1955 and is still today a nonprofit auxiliary of the United States Air Force. It provides training to 12 to 21-year-olds who are interested in a future in aviation, the military, or both. The CAP isn't all training. They actually make an impact by flying humanitarian missions in natural disasters, as well as search and rescue missions. Oswald began attending CAP meetings at Lakefront Airport in June of 1955. On July 27th, he switched to a different CAP squadron at Moisant Airport because it was closer to his house. Lee's friend, Ed Vogel, joined the Moisant squadron with Lee a few weeks later. This is where we have the first appearance of one of the most colorful characters of the JFK assassination, David Ferry. According to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, Ferry was the personal pilot for mafia kingpin Carlos Marcello, who brought Marcello back to the United States after he had been deported to Guatemala by Attorney General Robert Kennedy. Ferry is a very interesting guy who was connected to anti-Castro Cubans and also many other notorious figures in the case, like Guy Bannister. New Orleans prosecutor Jim Garrison would go on to allege that David Ferry was one of the men responsible for the murder of President Kennedy. We'll take a closer look at David Ferry when we get to Oswald's time in New Orleans in the summer of 1963. But as it pertains to the summer of 1955, the question with David Ferry and Lee Oswald is whether or not they knew one another from their time together in the Civil Air Patrol. Fred O'Sullivan, who gave Oswald the invite to the CAP, says David Ferry left the Lakefront Squadron to move to Moisant around the same time that Oswald did. Colin Hamer attended 10 to 12 meetings of the CAP where Oswald was also present. He knew Oswald and Ed Vogel, and he said that the CAP meetings were at the Eastern Airlines hangar at Moisant Airport. They met on Friday nights and Sunday afternoons, and David Ferry was always present when Oswald was. Ed Vogel said Oswald was in the CAP for two or three, maybe four drills. He remembered that Oswald attended a party that Ferry put on after he earned his stripes. Jerry Paradis was a former instructor at the Lakefront CAP who said that Oswald attended 10 or 15 meetings where Ferry was the instructor. He said of Oswald and Ferry knowing each other, quote, "I'm not saying that they may have been together. I'm saying it is a certainty." Thomas Lewis Clark worked for David Ferry at his gas station on Veterans Highway. Clark says that Ferry told him that he had been Oswald's instructor in the Civil Air Patrol. John Irion was in the CAP at the same time as Oswald and Ed Vogel in 1955, and he says that their squadron was led by David Ferry, bringing the total number of people who have knowledge of Oswald being in the Civil Air Patrol with David Ferry to at least six. The question of whether Ferry knew Oswald was decided once and for all by a photograph that PBS Frontline obtained from Oswald's fellow CAP member John Ciravallo. The picture shows Oswald and Ferry together at the same cookout with other CAP members, proving definitively that what these six witnesses said was true. In the summer of 1955, Lee Harvey Oswald did know David Ferry. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll continue sorting through the details of Oswald's childhood leading up to the time when Oswald joined the Marines. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.